it's time to go out and...
Hey, everybody. We are back again one more time in that nightclub at the end of the world. It is Sunday, the 3rd of March, 2013, and I am back in Crestone, Colorado, after having spent Monday through Friday in Los Angeles, California. Oh, what a shock that's been. It's been almost 2 years since I have lived in Los Angeles, and it was an amazing shock when I left here in north of Moffat, Colorado, outside of Crestone. It was 10 degrees on Monday morning, and it has been one of the coldest winters in 30 years. We've hit 22, 25 below several times, and I was there, and I got there, and oh my God, I felt the breeze, and I felt the sunshine. And then I looked at the traffic. Fortunately, the people who had flown me out to L.A., Media Mayhem, the Lip TV, were absolutely gracious hosts. I had limo rides wherever I needed to go, and I was all set to say, God, I miss this. It's been hard out here in the wilderness, from the wilderness, for the six-plus months that I've been here. But that wore off in about 12 to 24 hours. And I enjoyed the availability of food. I enjoyed being able to walk and find almost anything I wanted. I was staying at a place in Hollywood that was dedicated to Hollywood. And I had gangsters and movie stars all over the walls in my room. And I did two great interviews, amazing interviews that were so emotionally satisfying for me, on a show called Media Mayhem, hosted by Allison Hope Weiner. I just put a fresh link to that up on my Facebook page, and you can go there and you can see the first of two interviews that I did there, and it was a killer interview, but that was because I was asked the right questions by a professional journalist in a place where it was one pro-journo talking to another, one authentic journalist talking to another. And I covered a lot of stuff about my past work. I had a great time. I saw a lot of old friends, had some great food. But during my down times, I would sit outside this hotel, which was on Franklin Avenue in Hollywood, north of Hollywood Boulevard. If you've been to L.A., you know where it is, Hollywood. I was at Franklin and Gower. And I would sit, and I would watch for hours as tens of thousands of cars would drive by, people stuck in traffic and spending their lives in those cars, thinking that that was living. And it really sickened me. I was very ready to come back to this remote place where I have the mountains and the valley and Mother Earth and all of these things around me to keep me much better company. But it was a great trip, and I'll be happy to go back and see those friends again and do what I got to do. I'll go anywhere that I have to go to do what I have to do now, because I'm 62 years old, and I'm not planning on living for another 20 years, regardless of what happens. I am planning on burning the flame of my life authentically until the last possible minute. But it was good to be in LA. It was very good to see some people I haven't seen in a while, some people that I really care about. And I just had a great time on Media Mayhem. I really encourage you to go to my Facebook page or just Google Media Mayhem, and you'll find it. You'll be led right there. It was one of the best interviews that I think I've ever done, but that I give great credit for to the host, Allison Hope Weiner, who used to write for the New York Times. And we got into some deep stuff. We got into Pat Tillman. We got into LAPD. We got into CIA. We got into Cheney. We got into a lot of the investigative journalism that I had done for so many years. And it was a very satisfying trip, and it was a great week. But I am glad to be home, wherever home is. Of course, I'm home wherever spirit wants me to be. I have the whole planet, and that's where I live, and that's where we all live together. So let's do a recap, if you will, about where I've been taking this show for the last year. I've been trying to hammer home some basic points. And over the last year, I've been building relentlessly on several themes. One, conditions on our planet have deteriorated to the point where any number of emergencies are so bad. Let's put climate change and the great work of Guy McPherson, of doing his own work and amalgamating all the other peer-reviewed research, but there are so many of them. There's Fukushima, 50% unemployment throughout Europe, worse unemployment rates than the Great Depression. riots, protests, shutting down rail lines all over the world, all of that. All these emergencies are so bad that they cannot be solved by known human means in the 3D Cartesian world. That was the epiphany that I and so many others reached last spring, just about a year ago. Two, there is uncontestable evidence, as presented by Alcoholics Anonymous and recognized by science, that spiritual solutions, those not explainable by 3D measurement, Cartesian logic, not only work but are very real. Mankind is now facing a challenge, which is either evolve or perish, grow up or die. How many years have I been telling you guys that? That's where we are right now. There's no way to go back and fix any of the old system. There's no way to go back and undo things which have been set in motion, not from the means that we have been taught are the only means available to us. We haven't lied to about that. Three, the new peer-reviewed particle quantum physics research has demonstrated, and here we go to the work of Greg Braden, but as well, Michio Kaku, Amiko Swami, great particle stuff that David Wilcock has brought out, and pointed to all peer-reviewed solid science that shows that frequency, sound, if you will, determines physical reality. It's amazingly solid work that consciousness determines what we see, touch, taste, feel, and experience. That's science. Fourth point, that there are two basic frequencies to choose from, basically, on this planet. Fear, a lower frequency, and love, a higher frequency. Five, that we have been and are living in a fear-based reality, which is changing and giving way. It is losing its grip. It is coming to an end. Point six, that there is a remarkable consistency between ancient indigenous prophecy and the recent findings of particle physics. How could it be that particle physics is now telling us things that prophecies 5, 10, 15,000 older, prehistoric, tell us, that there is consistency between that? And that seven, many ancient prophecies have been remarkably accurate in predicting current events. Okay, so that's what I've been building on as we have been moving forward through this amazing transition which our species and our planet is passing through. And it led to some amazing dialogue on my Facebook page today. And there was a post from a friend named Michael Montes who has not stuck his head up yet. But he wrote something that started a dialogue, but he wrote something that was brilliant, and I'm going to read it to you. Prophecies are a form of myth. And myth is like the dreaming of a culture. We all dream. You and I do. Myths and dreams have discernible patterns, a kind of anatomy of the psyche. Every human exhibits the pattern of having two arms, two legs, a torso, a head, and yet there are no two exactly alike. The patterns of so many cultural mythologies, including the Mayan and others mentioned in this thread, are showing us that fundamental transformations of human perception, imagining, thinking and behavior are happening and will continue to happen. One of the things that really strikes me, Michael Montes wrote, in looking at cultural mythologies, prophetic offerings from individuals, and the dreams of individuals in their personal lives, is the image of what we seem to call the elitist interests in this whole emerging drama. We see them as some form of enemy or evil, but what we're really looking at is the mythological image of the trickster. The coyote. Images that we may know as loci from comic book movies, Wile E. Coyote from cartoons, there's the coyote, or the emperor from Star Wars. If we can understand this image in our psychological and material lives, we know that their plans more often blow up in their face than not. This doesn't mean that they aren't to be given respect, but it does mean that the more energy we put into fighting or resisting them when it isn't absolutely necessary, the more they can use their own energy against us by turning it to fear and panic. I feel a sneeze coming on. Maybe not. My point is that I've come to see that focusing as much as possible on what is right and sustainable action instead of feeding fear and panic by fighting the shadows is a sound response to, one, countering the enemies of life who would use the emergent transformation to increase their power, Two, surviving the fundamental changes that are coming as the needed rebalancing of human life on this planet. And three, a way to begin reforming our human culture from one that is based on unsustainable hubris, great line, to one that is based on sustainable interdependence with each other and the planet. Michael Munter writes, in my reading of the prophecies in question and others, the invitation we are being given by the universe is to move from a state of arrest in a pre-adolescent immaturity wherein we remain self-focused and dependent on outer paternal authorities of government and corporations to meet our needs, through a stage of adolescence and into a state of maturity wherein we understand that we are called to serve something greater than ourselves and that all beings are inherently interdependent upon each other in life in the world. This movement can be facilitated by the return of culturally and community-sanctioned rites of passage through which we can help each other mark the maturing change of consciousness needed to manifest a human culture that is sustainable instead of one in which we are selecting ourselves for extinction. I see this as a fundamental pattern being revealed to us in the prophecies of many cultures. That's a beautiful passage, extremely well written, and thank you. Michael, you never stuck your head up before on Facebook, but boy, you were on time today. That prompted a really good dialogue. My dear friend, Grandma Coco, who was all over my Facebook page and a very dear friend and has been a great light for many of us, responded in that link. She wrote, in case anyone is actually interested in using the Hopi prophecy to gain insight to the scientific reality we attempt to make sense of, let me offer a quote from someone I admire greatly. In this tradition, a story is holy, and it is used as medicine, she told Radiance Magazine. The story is not told to lift you up, to make you feel better, or to entertain you, although all those things could be true. The story is meant to take the spirit into a descent to find something that is lost or missing and to bring it back to consciousness again. That was a quote the Grandma Coco used from Clarissa Pinkola Estes. Michael Montes came back and also commented and said, Grandma Coco, Dr. Estes is a true wild and wise woman and is indeed needed in the transition. She tells us all to answer the call to adventure and to bring healing back to us all, to the world. As Jung, Carl Jung, the famous psychiatrist, the contemporary of Sigmund Freud, said, it would take perhaps a dozen or so individuals to do their inner work authentically, great word, in order to redeem the world. It is my contention, not that we have too much evil, but too few willing to respond to the call to the inner and outer heroic journey. Perhaps we have not yet entered enough crisis to light that fire in our hearts yet. At least we have warriors such as Mr. Rupert, thank you for that, willing to place themselves between the enemies of life and those that aren't able to stand on their own. Unfortunately, the sheep fear the guard dogs because they fail to see the wolves. Oh. That's some good shit. Man, that's food for us who are awake here and trying to navigate our way along the edge of the knife between the horror that on the one side and the collapse and the calamity that is befalling the world and our belief, faith, hope, knowing, and the heart space that we hold for an ascension, not only of ourselves as a species, but for all life on this planet and, in fact, the planet itself. That's just organic soul food right there. Now, not all prophecies are created equal. Somebody hit me on Facebook a couple weeks ago. You believe in prophecy? I said, man, basically what I said was there are white belt prophecies, there are green belt prophecies, there are brown belt prophecies, and there are black belt prophecies, and there are ways to understand them. But in my study for many, many years of indigenous peoples all over the world, not just the first peoples on Turtle Island, the North American continent, but the indigenous peoples of every continent and every world and all of those who have had and held an earth-based spiritual view that our Mother Earth is sacred through all of the persecutions, through all of the genocides, through all of the mass graves, through all of the murders and tortures, whether it be from the Catholic Church against Christians, like Hermetic Christians, or the persecution of Native Americans, or the Bushmen in Australia or in Africa, all around the world. They have held something constant, but never in my studies and my travels and my meetings with indigenous elders, medicine men, and shaman, have I experienced a case where a shaman would take an oral tradition and modify it for the slightest reason. That's something white men do. That's not something indigenous peoples do, because their way of transmitting truth that has been enforced to this day is that the elders carry the stories true word for word. And they are surrounded by all the members, young and old, of the tribe, who will know if they have changed one word to suit any purpose. It's white men who rewrite documents and lie, or who sign their oaths to treaties, that the Sioux will have this land as long as the rivers flow and as long as the grass grows and as long as there is earth. That's what white men do. That's not what indigenous people do, especially not the keepers of prophecies. That being said, let me just read you a Hopi prophecy, and just park this, just listen to this. A Hopi prophecy said, the fourth world shall end soon. Now, that also coincides with the Mayan prophecy. These are all avenues that I would love to explore and hope to be able to sometime soon with a budget. The fourth world shall end soon, and the fifth world will begin. This elders everywhere. No, that's true. The signs over many years have been fulfilled, and so few are left. This is the first sign. We are told of the coming of the white-skinned men, like Pahana. Pahana is a very old mythical figure from indigenous mythology, especially from South Central America, from the Anasazi race. Pahana was a white man, but a good white man, but not living like Pahana men who took the land that was not theirs, and men who struck their enemies with thunder, men with guns. This is the second sign. Our lands will see the coming of spinning wheels filled with voices. In his youth, my father saw this prophecy come true with his eyes, the white men bringing their families in wagons across the prairies. This, the Hopi prophecy said, is the third sign. A strange beast like a buffalo with a great long horns will overrun the land in large numbers. These white feathers saw with his eyes the coming of the white men's cattle, cows, not indigenous here. This is the fourth sign. The land will be crossed by snakes of iron, railroad tracks. This is the fifth sign. The land shall be crisscrossed by a giant spider's web, power and phone lines. This is the sixth sign. The land shall be crisscrossed with rivers of stone that make pictures in the sun. The interstate highway system, concrete highways and their mirage-producing effects. This is the seventh sign. You will hear of the sea turning black and many living things dying because of it. And you say Deepwater Horizon, Macondo, and many more oil spills. This is the eighth sign. You will see many youth who wear their hair long like my people come and join the tribal nations to learn their ways and wisdom. Could this be the hippie movement? Could this be me with my ponytail, from which I probably wear my macaw feather when I attend ceremonies? And this is the ninth and last sign. You will hear of a dwelling place in the heavens above the earth that shall fall with a great crash. It will appear as a blue star. Very soon after this, the ceremonies of my peoples will cease. These are signs that a great destruction is coming. The world shall rock to and fro. The white men will battle against other people in other lands. With those who possess the first light of wisdom, there will be many columns of smoke and fire, such as White Feather has seen. The white man will make the deserts not far from here. Only those which come will cause disease and great dying. Many of my people, understanding the prophecies, shall be safe. Those who stay and live in the places of my people shall also be safe. There will also be much to rebuild, and soon, very soon afterward, Pahana will return. He shall bring with him the dawn of the fifth world. He shall plant the seeds of his wisdom in their hearts. Even now the seeds are being planted. These shall smooth the way to the emergence into the fifth world. But White Feather shall not see it. I am old and dying. You perhaps will see it in time and time. The old Indian fell silent. They had arrived at his destination, and Reverend David Young stepped stopped to let him out of the car. They never met again. Reverend Young died in 1976, so he did not live to see further fulfillment of this remarkable prophecy. You cannot ignore that anymore. Well, you can, at your own risk and at your own peril, at the price of your own authenticity, at the price of your soul, at the price of what? Dot, dot, dot. You cannot ignore that any more than it would have been possible to ignore the massive insider trading on the stock market, on markets from Hong Kong to Chicago to New York to London to Berlin around September the 11th, any more than it would be impossible to have missed the fact that there were no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, or that we are not having a recovery and the world is not getting to be a better place to live in. So I am not quick to dismiss these things, because I still function like I did in crossing the Rubicon, whether I'm dealing with the evidence around September 11th from, if you will, Cartesian sources and my thousand footnotes in that book. I don't ignore the clues, because the responsibility of a detective is to take all the clues and make sense of them, understanding that the crime scene is what dictates reality. You match everything back to what you found at the crime scene. You don't throw anything out, not if you don't want the truth. And we cannot afford to throw out spirituality at this point. We cannot afford to throw out all of these things, which are clearly pointing to a set of conditions that we are all living in right now at this moment, and we cannot ignore or deny. So there are a couple of prophecies that have come up tonight, and we're going to talk about those. One will be the prophecy of St. Malachi about the Pope. And one will be the prophecy of the blue and the red kachina of the Hopi people. There are many prophecies out there. There are ways to evaluate these prophecies exactly like I have done throughout my career as a journalist and author, to separate and to rank order and to find in them lessons, if you will, signposts. I sound like Rod Serling, signposts into the Twilight Zone. But we are in the Twilight Zone, aren't we? If you look at Wikipedia, we talk about the blue kachina, and Wikipedia writes about the final sign of the blue star. I personally suspect that the blue kachina may have already come and gone. The blue kachina is a serious warning. The red kachina, which will follow soon thereafter, 6-7 years, it could be months, who knows, will be the purification of Mother Earth, from which a new Earth will be born. I didn't write these prophecies, but Wikipedia writes, the ninth and final sign of destruction is described by Whitefeather as, you will hear of a dwelling place in the heavens above the earth that shall fall with a great crash. It will appear as a blue star. Very soon after this, the ceremonies of my people will cease. This idea of the blue star kachina marking the end of all Hopi rituals is reflected in Waters' book of the Hopi, in which he states, quote, the end of all Hopi ceremonialism will come when a kachina removes his mask during a dance in the plaza before uninitiated children. The absence of Hopi ceremonialism will coincide with the inevitable destruction of the Fourth World. Waters suggests that World War III will begin and the United States will be ripped apart by war, leaving only the Hopis and their homeland intact. The war of the end of the world is described as a spiritual conflict with material matters. This is Wikipedia. It's all footnoted. According to Hopi prophecy, as reported by Waters, shortly after the blue star kachina is visible to all, the day of purification is realized. The true white brother will come to earth in search of Hopi, who steadfastly adhere to the ancient teachings. It is said that the true white brother, if the true white brother is successful in finding those who still follow the Hopi way of life, the world will be created anew, and all the faithful will be saved from destruction. However, the Hopi mythology also details an alternative version of the prophecy, one in which the true white brother fails in his mission and is unable to find uncorrupted men and women. Then it is said that the earth will be completely destroyed and none will be spared. If you want to wax back biblically, you can go back to Job, who wanted to see if he could find 100 or 10 honest men in the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah. Well, we, all of us listening tonight, and many, many millions of other people are clear evidence that there are many of us who are living in the right space, and we'll close the show with a really good observation about that. The Hopis also did believe in extraterrestrials. They were very clear about it. So do many of the indigenous peoples with whom I have interacted, and that would include Lakota, Dakota, Cherokee, and Utes. I live on Ute land here in the San Luis Valley. Ancient petroglyphs such as Prophecy Rock in Arizona have been very specific about it. And these are common threads which not only weave through North America, but they weave throughout the world. And it is my great hope that someday I will have the means to go put all of these pieces together, because there's more food for us there than there is in listening to mainstream news. Aside from keeping our ear to the ground to find out what things coming to eat us first. Interesting to note as we sneak up on the break, boy, this first half hour has just screamed by. We do have a new white trash song that I'm really happy to share with you tonight. But this is from CNN, the most trusted name in news. Boy, I eviscerated CNN with this on this interview with Allison Hope Weiner on Media Mayhem over what they did in the Tailwind stories about sarin gas use in Southeast Asia. I just have such disrespect for them. I think it's kind of funny that Alex Jones now pops up on CNN. Well, there's a match made in hell, but CNN this year, this is from Saturday, March 2nd, yesterday. Welcome to the year of the comet, we hope. That was their headline. CNN, first a meteor exploded over Russia, followed closely by an asteroid flyby. Now two comets are expected to put on a naked eye spectacle for sky watchers in the northern hemisphere. Up first is Comet Pan-STARRS, STARRS, which gets its funky name from the telescope credited with discovering it in June of 2001. The comet is already visible through telescopes in the southern hemisphere, and it should swing into view over the northern hemisphere beginning around March 8th. It's hard to predict exactly how bright Pan-STARRS will be, but you should be able to see it without binoculars or telescopes, said Don Yeomans of NASA's Near Earth Orbit Program. It should be about as bright as the stars in the Big Dipper, but there is a chance it will be brighter than this, much brighter. But likewise, it might not get that bright. Who knows? We'll see, but something's going on here. Part of the brightness will depend on how close Pan-STARRS gets to the sun. Comets are made up of water ice, the closer it gets. And so we have seen a number of astronomical events, and we didn't have time, it's not possible in this show to go back through all of the astronomical evidence that corroborates, confirms, that is harmonious and resonates with so many ancient prophecies. That's a lot of work, and again, I'd like to have the funding to really go do that, and many other things. But the point is, alas, Horatio, said Hamlet to Horatio, I think it was Act 1, there are more things in heaven and earth than are dreamt of in your philosophy. And my distinct position is that those who want to live back in that world with all the despair and the cognitive dissonance that lives there will find no way to do so comfortably unless they expand their consciousness enough to allow that there may be some loving, some beneficial, and some accurate cues and clues that have been preserved for us for tens of thousands of years, and especially the last 6,000 years or so since the god Jehovah separated man from the planet, that give us a way to find a new consciousness and to move into it and to occupy it. That's a great word, too. Occupy and authentic. We have some long history with occupy, but we are now at the bottom of the hour. This is Michael C. Rupert, Tracker of Truth. I'm here with you on the Lifeboat Hour on Progressive Radio Network, and we will be back with you right after these messages.
All the streetlights around me, in the wall-to-wall prison of my city, flickering dirty neon over alleys my neighborhood is torn down around.
Yeah, we are in the age of Aquarius. That was Inner Reach, which is the first song we played from our new album of the same name. That's the title song from the album, Inner Reach. And you can find that song and the song we're going to play here in a few minutes, Drifted, on the website, newwhitetrash.com. And we're doing something different in light of our evolution to the new age. You may go to the website if you like that song or this song, and we will get more up as we can afford to get them mastered and up and out to you. We'll raise money that way. But you can listen to the song for free. You can even download the song for free. Just play it. And if you'd like to contribute, you can contribute anything from $1 to $1 million. I definitely recommend contributing $1 million. We'll get the album finished that way. But you can pay whatever you think it's worth on the website, newwhitetrash.com, and we will bring you the song here, Drifted, in just a few minutes. I'm being merciless in the way I'm teasing you with that, but that's okay. I like to tease. Youth unemployment all over Europe, over 50%. They've run out of numbers, just like they have run out of charts or graphs or meters to measure the level of smog in Beijing, which was totally compounded this week by a major dust storm. The pictures were just grotesque. And that in conjunction with everything else that's going on. I'm watching the situation at the Hanford Nuclear Station in southern Washington. This was from Cairo TV in Washington. Officials at the nation's most contaminated nuclear site are considering a number of options to deal with 6 leaking waste tanks there. We don't know how many there are, folks. It's like there's only a few billion dollars in the fraudulent mortgages, including building a plant that would turn the waste into glass. Give me a break. Net Energy, read my book, Confronting Collapse. Turn the waste into glass. Yeah, right. Another option is to put covers over the tanks to prevent rainfall from getting in. Well, it's funny, there was an aerial photo when all the tanks were covered. Jane Hedges of the Washington State Department of Ecology say 2 such covers already have been installed at Hanford. Doesn't stop the leak or cover what's already out there from however many tanks. But they've been installed at the tank farms and have decreased the amount of moisture getting into the tanks, he told members of the State Senate Energy, Environment, and Telecommunications Committee on Thursday that state and federal officials are still evaluating their options for confronting the leaks. That sounds remarkably like Fukushima, which is still out of control, bearing in mind that we have another 435 nuclear reactors on the planet that need to be safely shut down, most of which are starting to fall apart, like San Onofre in California and so many others around the world. And if we don't shut them down and contain them, we're all dead anyway. But, hey, you know, Guy McPherson, that wonderful bringer of cheerful news about the state of the climate. I'm sorry, I'm laughing. You know, has reminded us that a 2-degree centigrade raise in temperature, enough to kill us all, is already cooked into the books, and it's already gone way beyond that with multiple feedback loops working. And so, you know, all that stuff is still going on. Paul Craig Roberts, who has been a stalwart out here for many years, was writing for Global Research, who has been doing great work on February 26th. He was writing about GMO, man-made biological threats, plant diseases, and germ warfare. In the United States, he writes, everything is polluted. Democracy is polluted with special interests and corrupt politicians. Accountability is polluted with executive branch exemptions from the law and the Constitution and the special legal privileges for corporations, such as the Supreme Court giving the right to corporations to purchase American elections. The Constitution is polluted with corrupt legal interpretations from the Bush and Obama regimes. Waters are polluted with toxic waste spills, oil spills. I love it. He has the right attitude. Glyphosate now shows up in wells, streams, and rain. That's Monsanto's wonderful Roundup 2. Air is polluted with a variety of substances, and all of these costs are imposed on a society of ordinary people by corporations that banked profits by not having to take those costs into account. This is the way in which unregulated capitalism works. That was a really great essay that showed up on my Facebook page, also on the World News Desk at CollapseNet, which is becoming very, very useful. And I was pleased to give CollapseNet a huge plug on this interview that I did with Allison Hope Weiner at Media Mayhem in Los Angeles. I really want to go back there and hang with those people some more. I just had so much fun as a journalist. So here we are now. All right. Before we talk about the Pope, let's play the new white trash song. I want to do that. We need a musical break here before we get into that, right? So, New White Trash has 18-19 songs now for our new album, Inner Reach. They are not all mixed and mastered. We don't have the money to do that. We're on a pay-as-you-go basis with the world-famous legendary Bob Rice, who's now working with Paul Simon. Before that, he works with Roger Waters, and we're just pleased that he likes us and we like him, and he works with us. But we're doing this on a come-as-you-go basis, and this is a song tonight from the new album that Doug Lewis, who wrote the song based upon poetry that he wrote in Turkey a couple of decades ago. Doug is just a machine, and he's been so good and so prolific. But it's sung by Kristen Weygaard, our good friend from New White Trash, who was with us on the first album. Kristen was the original Annie on Broadway, and she was in the original cast of Hair. She is a tremendous walking encyclopedia of music history, and she lends a beautiful voice to this song. The tables are turned, whereas I sang the lead on Inner Reach, Kristen sings the lead on this song called Drifted, and I sing back up for her, and I'm very proud to do that. Here's a new song from New White Trash called Drifted.
Got the laws of the land. Two, number two, you got the drives of a man. Three, number three, you got a tug of war struggle. Two sides of one heart spells trouble. Ship that sails and those without an anchor in a storm. Woe to he who sails without a look beyond. Called out your name to the four-quartered earth, to the 12-quartered wind in my search. Back of beyond, I've come to your eyes. Black in the dawn, told many lies. Woe to the ship that sails and those without an
this bloody place. I watched my sail turn to dust, my rudder turn to rust, my compass spin and stop at a point where I could not.
Caught arrows rim the skin of my flesh, dried with the torch, the blood of my breath. And when all that was not quite enough, I doubled my strength, walking with trouble. Ship that sails and those without an anchor in a storm. Woe to he who sails without a look beyond.
curse this bloody place. I watched my sail turn to dust, my rudder turn to rust, my compass spin and stop at a point where I could not.
That was Drifted from New White Trash from our new album, Inner Reach. We've got two songs ready to go. They're up on the New White Trash website. If you like Inner Reach or Drifted, go down there and play it, listen to it, download it for free. And if you'd like to contribute, anything from $1 to $1 million is very much welcome and a sign of your emotional and spiritual unity with all the things that we're trying to do through so many venues, trying to be whole and complete human beings. Okay, we're in the last 15 minutes. God, this hour has gone by fast. Wow. We just had the first papal resignation in 600 years, and of course, obviously, it's no big leap of faith, and one would not be labeled a conspiracy theorist. By the way, you know who came up with the term conspiracy theorist? Richard Nixon, and that's where the term was coined by a president who was engaged in an active conspiracy in trying to discredit. So as I look at the papal resignation, it's not difficult to see, of course, that the pedophilia scandals and Ratzinger's Nazi past and all of that had a great deal to do with this. And there was a mysterious, one of the papal butlers took off six, 7 months ago with all these papal records, and one wonders at the depth of Machiavellian. Of course, he was working for the popes and the Borgias. Stuff that's going on there, but there is a much bigger shift, in my opinion, in spiritual power on this planet that is taking place that will remain to be seen. So as I start looking at this, I came across, it was pointed out to me, the prophecy of Saint Malachi, M-A-L-A-C-H-Y. If you're Irish, you pronounce the Y like it sounds. It's a Y, Saint Malachi. And he was the first Irish saint who predicted 112 popes. And there's a lot of hubristic dialogue, but remarkably, he made a lot of really, really solid predictions. There are holes that can be contested, but if I'm a cop at a crime scene, I don't worry about anything except for the fact that somebody said something that shows up at my crime scene. That's what you got to reconcile. You don't throw out evidence at a crime scene because something else somebody has said might have been wrong. You're trying to solve the crime. And planet Earth is the scene of the crime, a big crime that was committed, let's say, I don't know, 6,000 years ago or maybe longer than that. There's a lot of references. Malachi predicted 112 popes, and Wikipedia did a large, and I've got big excerpts. We don't have time to read them all, unfortunately. But it does acknowledge that St. Malachi predicted, or his predictions state, that the 111th pope out of 112 would be the prophecy of, excuse me, the Pope, who would be identified as the patron of the olive. There's a whole list, and I just don't think I'm going to have time to read them all, about going back through Pope Pius, through Pope John 23rd, through John Paul I, John Paul II, and Benedict, that were right kind of seriously on the money. There are others who say some weren't, but I'm focusing on the ones that were, because that means something. It wasn't coincidence. But it was very interesting that the quatrain, if you will, that was written by Saint Malachi, or attributed to him, called Benedict the glory of the olive. And when Cardinal Ratzinger was elected Pope, everybody said, "Well, Malachi was wrong again. See, there's nothing invented in Ratzinger's coat of arms. There is nothing in anywhere that connects him with olives." But he took the name of Benedict after Saint Benedict. And if you look at the Benedictine Order's coat of arms, it's got olives on the coat of arms, and the Olivetans are a branch of the Benedictine Order. And boom, there came up the olives. And in the prophecy for the 112th Pope, it talks about in the final persecution of the Holy Roman Empire, there will sit in the there was a break in the dialogue here. There will sit Peter, Petrus Romanus, Peter of Rome, which is often read as part of the Peter the Roman prophecy, and other interviews, interpreters view it as a separate, incomplete sentence. But this was to be the last pope, Peter of Rome, who would shepherd his flock through great tribulations, after which the great judgment would come, the end of the world would come, foretold to be the last pope. Now, I found a lot of consistent references to a black pope. Now, historically, the black pope just referred to the head of the Jesuit order. And in much of the current writings about this, I see references to black pope all over the place, but I see acknowledgments even from the Catholic Church that acknowledges that there's a reference to a black pope, but nobody says where it comes from. But one of the leading contenders for this is, now I got to scroll back to the name. I kind of did this out of order here, but there's a cardinal from Ghana who is black, who is 3-1 odds, but he's like the front runner to become pope. His name is Peter. Now, if he takes the name Peter, I'm really going to start paying attention to this. And there is not enough time to go deeply into this right now. But as I have read this, and I've spent 4 or 5 days trying to dig through this, I don't have the money, I don't have the time, but there's something serious here, and I'm watching it closely. Now, this is where I would add that, you know, I have talked about ETs here. Peter Turkson of Ghana, who is black, has a Muslim uncle. And so this is all extremely attention-getting. It's making more sense than worrying about sequestration as a solution to all of the other problems in the world, or listening to any of the crap coming out of Washington or the IMF. John Kerry's out just being a strong-arm bully all over the world, encouraging Egypt to roll with the IMF plan. I mean, he's the enforcer, and he's kind of ramping up the rhetoric, the hubristic rhetoric over Syria and Iran. We'll see where that goes. Of course, ultimately, it has to come to a fight if we live in a 3D world, and that's kind of obvious. But going back to the Pope, as I listen to this, I'm going to look into it more. It takes a lot of work. It's very intensive. But I apply the same standards that I did in crossing the Rubicon. You assemble the evidence. You put the pieces together. Everybody has a bias. I have biases. And any journalist who tells you otherwise is an idiot or a liar. But what you do, if you're an honorable journalist, a professional journalist, or a researcher, is you take your bias and you work twice as hard to prove them wrong. Because your obligation, your fundamental obligation as an authentic journalist, is to tell the truth no matter what, no matter where the chips may fall. And there's some great sound bites out of that interview I did with Media Mayhem. I hope you all look it up and find it. Media Mayhem, Allison Hope Weiner. It was just a joy for me to experience that interview. Coming back to the Pope, I'm sorry. It's not Alzheimer's, it's some timers. What can I tell you? As I look at these prophecies, I find things that I cannot throw out or dismiss, even as I apply the rigorous standards of critical thinking that I have used with everything else. I find things that are very interesting. Now, if we get a black pope who takes the name Peter and goes to Rome, I'm going to pay very close attention. But I am also paying very close attention to, and I'm working to obtain, and I know that they exist, those of you who have followed extraterrestrial UFO stuff know that there are credible and there are not credible, but one of the most credible sources for ET stuff, photographs, I'm 25, 30 years of being on public record, is a guy named Billy Meyer from Switzerland, who has had ongoing contact with the Pleiadians. And he has been enormously credible. No one has proved him falsifying. No one has challenged him. And he has offered the sober reflections for a long time. And there is unpublished stuff from Billy Meyer saying that the Pleiadians, extraterrestrials, who we know are around because I had Robert Hastings as a guest on this show, who had documented Air Force colonels, Air Force commanding officers, servicemen of the highest levels of screening all over the world, Malmstrom here in the States, in Britain, and many nuclear facilities around the world of UFOs showing up and disabling nuclear missiles in their silos, which meshes with both ancient prophecies and stuff that we hear from quote-unquote ET sources saying that we will not be allowed to destroy this planet. And one of those Billy Meyer unpublished prophecies, which I will get and I will look into deeply, says that World War III will start immediately after the destruction of Rome. Now, the destruction of Rome, the city of the seven hills, is referred to in the Bible, in Revelations. There's a Revelations passage. It's referred to by Nostradamus. It's referred to in the prophecy of St. Malachi. And in the Billy Meyer stuff, it says that Rome will be destroyed, after which World War III will start immediately. Now, I just sit back and I collect my data and I apply my logical stuff to it. Nobody's ever shot me down for bad research or inauthentic research. And I notice that Mount Etna in Sicily has erupted and a lava dome is building under the city of Naples. And volcanic and seismic activity is increasing all over the planet. Major earthquakes in China, volcanism in Kamchatka, in Central America. Mother Earth is alive and she is moving. And I would submit to all of you, my dear beloved friends, who have been with me for a long time now, that you ignore all of these things at your own peril. And what my aim to be through this very fast-moving hour, I covered a lot of stuff tonight, is to open your consciousness to the possibility that other solutions are possible. And that without giving up or surrendering our obligation to bear witness to the suffering in our planet, that's one side of the knife, we are also obligated to expand our consciousness to make room for the world in which the human heart has longed to live for as long as we have been dreamers, for as long as we have had myths, for as long as we have responded to fairy tales and belief and a knowledge that there is a better way to live, and goddammit, we're going to find it, and we're going to go there together. That's really where I want to leave all of you guys tonight, and that's really important because it's getting uglier out there by the minute. And let me just leave you with this thought here tonight. This is also from a Hopi prophecy, but these are great questions. And I think any Native American medicine man or elder or chief would tell you this and ask you these questions. You have been telling people that this is the 11th hour. Now you must go back and tell the people that this is the hour. And there are things to be considered. Where are you living? What are you doing? What are your relationships? Are you in right relation? Where is your water? Know your garden. It is time to speak your truth, create your community, be good to each other, and do not look outside yourself for the leader. There we go, ladies and gentlemen. This is Michael C. Rupert, Tracker of Truth. What a great fast hour this was. I will be back with you next week on the Lifeboat Hour here at PRN FM.